This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
In our next story, it's one that has captured headlines globally, and it's about Saudi teenager Rahaf Mohammed Al-Kunun. So this 18-year-old woman barricaded herself in a Bangkok airport hotel room on Sunday to prevent her forcible return to Saudi Arabia, where she claims that her family will kill her because she has renounced her religion and it is a crime punishable by death under Saudi Arabia's law.
She captured the attention of social media users around the world by live-tweeting every twist and turn in her story. Her brand new Twitter account has attracted over 50,000 followers in a day and a half.
So from her room, Rahaf said, "I am in the hotel. I need a country to protect me as soon as possible. I'm seeking asylum. My family is strict and locked me in a room for 6 months just for cutting my hair, and I'm sure they'll kill me as soon as I get out of jail."
On Wednesday, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees assessed Rahaf and found her to be a refugee and referred her to Australia for resettlement. Australia's Department of Home Affairs said it will consider this referral in the usual way, as it does with all UNHCR referrals.
So a UNHCR spokeswoman told The Guardian that Rahaf would remain in their care until a long-term solution has been found, saying she remains in a safe location in Bangkok for the time being.
The Australian Director of Human Rights Watch Australia, Elaine Pearson, said the government should act quickly to bring her safely to Australia. She added that she is a young woman whose face has been plastered around the world. She's more at risk than other refugees, not just from her family, but threats she has faced online and from her own government.
So we're crossing over now to Phil Robertson. He's based in Bangkok and he's the Deputy Director of the Asia Division at Human Rights Watch. Phil, thanks for joining us. So why do you think Rahaf's plight has captured global media attention?
That's an excellent question, and it's a little bit hard to explain in a short answer. I think that her plight and her courage came through her tweets. It was quite clear that she was in mortal danger, and the group of activists and others who initially supported her were able to effectively get a lot of global sympathy on their side. There was a massive surge of interest in her case and many people urging that she be saved. And because of that, we quickly saw the international media come into this. And once the international media got involved, then also the diplomats and UN agencies and everybody else prioritized the case. It went from being something that was completely unknown to being the top news story on almost all the international broadcasts within about 12 hours. And that was, I think, a testimony to the social media working for her, but then also people like us and others being involved on the ground and trying to get the right people in the right places and ensure that the UN got involved. The UN Refugee Agency went to try to get to her and get access to her. And then also that there was pressure applied on the Thai government to not send her back.
Talk to us about that. How much did the public attention and social media mobilization affect the course of action taken by both the Thai government and the UN?
Well, I think it was certainly very, very clear that the Thai government did want to send her back. And in fact, there was an effort to try to do so. And that's when she barricaded herself in the room on Monday morning. She knew that she had to try to avoid being sent back on that 11:15 flight to Kuwait. And so if she was able to resist through that hour, that she would be able to buy herself some more time. And the pressure on the Thais, I think what happened is as this grew into a bit of a movement, more and more media turned up at the international airport. Of course, there was also one person who was able, through a previous engagement, to get into her room and was able to film what was taking place. So it really became something that was too big for the Thais to handle. And it may have been that the Saudi Arabia government wasn't really clear with the Thais or transparent with the Thais on what they were doing here. But as it became bigger and bigger, I think the Thai government looked at it and they said, hey, you know, we didn't sign up for this kind of bad media attention. We're certainly not going to drag her to the plane in front of the TV cameras of the world. And we're just going to try to do the right thing here. And that's what they did. They let UNHCR go in. They let UNHCR play a role, and you know, that really was the critical issue and the critical decision that made this all work out.
On the line with us today, Phil Robertson, Deputy Director of Human Rights Watch, and we are talking about the case of an 18-year-old woman who is seeking refugee status. We will come back and discuss this further. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters, BFM 89.9.
It's the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. And on the line with us today, Phil Robertson, the Deputy Director of the Asia Division at Human Rights Watch. We are talking about the case surrounding Rahaf Mohammed Al-Kunun. Now, the UN Refugee Agency has granted Rahaf refugee status. How does that process go?
Well, they would interview her. There's a specific refugee status determination process. You know, there was an interpreter speaking Arabic and English. That person worked with a UNHCR officer to document her claims, to hear her story and why she feels she would be persecuted. And on the basis of that information and other information that would be available to UNHCR, to make a determination on whether she is a bona fide refugee and deserves international refugee protection. That's what they've done. UNHCR has made that determination. And once they made that determination, they then have referred her case to Australia for resettlement and basically long-term protection. That's why people are resettled to third countries as refugees, is because they need to be protected in another place.
How much protection can the UN give to Rahaf at this juncture?
Well, right now she is under their protection. They have her at a Bangkok hotel in a safe place. She is being protected by UN officers there. And I expect that that will continue until such time she leaves Thailand and goes to Australia. I mean, this is a very high profile case. And, you know, representatives of not just the various governments, but I think also the UN Refugee Agency, you know, at highest levels got involved because there was so much media attention on this. So, you know, no one wants to make any mistakes. Everyone wants to make sure that she get safely to where she's going. And I think that is something that is also an important consideration when we say, you know, how do we know she's going to be protected? It's because so much is on the line and there's so much attention that if anything started to go astray, I think there would be immediate action by many parties to intervene.
Right. But especially with the high-profile nature of this case, should Rahaf be granted entry to Australia, would she then require further protection from her family or even from others who might potentially want to hurt her?
Well, I think that's a concern, but that's something that's further down the road. Obviously, she knows people and has friends in Australia. One of the women who are helping with her Twitter account is there. There's the possibility of threats to them. But, you know, Australia is a very long way from Saudi Arabia. And I think that if she plays her cards right and she, you know, managed to get herself acclimated to Australia and has a good network, she'll be fine.
As we have mentioned, Australia is considering taking Rahaf in, but they've been careful to say that they would be following the necessary steps and processes. But given the urgency of the matter, how long would that take, and what would the requirements be?
Well, Australia has its own set of policies and regulations related to granting of refugee status and allowing people to come into the country. So those are procedures that they have to follow. I think that in a high-profile case, it will be possible to go much faster through those procedures. There may be some procedures that they desire to do and usually do, but they might not now because it's just a very highly prioritized case. We just don't know. That's an internal Australian process. What is clear is that we're probably talking a matter of days rather than weeks. Thailand has said to Australia and has said to the UN that they are very, very keen to have her move as quickly as possible. I think that Thailand recognizes that if she stays here for a longer period of time, she might be at risk. And now they don't want to have anything to go wrong for her while she's in Thailand. So, you know, they're really very insistent that she move as quickly as possible out of Thailand.
So now that Rahaf has refugee status, how does that affect the legal claims that her family or the Saudi government have over her, particularly when she gets moved out of Thailand and resettled safely?
Well, she's an 18-year-old woman. So she is an adult, according to international law, and she's her own person. So the family really has no claim on her. I mean, obviously, she's still traveling on a Saudi Arabia passport. And Saudi Arabia, you know, at some point could do something to that passport. But I assume once she gets to Australia and becomes gets settled there, that she will rather quickly apply for and get a permanent residency, which will lead ultimately to Australian citizenship. So there's very little once she goes to Australia that either her parents, particularly her father and her brother, who she fears a great deal, or the government will be able to do. You know, the major concern we have right now is that the father and the brother are still in Thailand, and they have tried to see her. They've tried to demand that they be allowed to have access to her. That request was denied by UNHCR because she said very clearly that she wants nothing to do with them. She doesn't want to see them at all. And I think that's a smart move on her part because she is at risk of intimidation and physical violence if they get in close proximity to her.
There is a separate case unfolding in Bangkok. 25-year-old Hakim Al-Araibi from Bahrain is currently being detained in prison. Hakim is a refugee who had already been granted asylum in Australia, but was captured when he came to Thailand with his wife for their honeymoon. Can you explain to us what the circumstances are for Hakim?
Well, Hakim Al-Araibi is a recognized refugee. He went to Australia, applied for refugee status. It was granted. And he is a permanent resident of Australia, and he was actually on the verge of getting his Australian citizenship before he came to Thailand on his honeymoon. I think in retrospect, I would have advised that maybe he should have done his honeymoon in Australia rather than Thailand, but he, for whatever reason, traveled here. And his situation is one where Bahrain is claiming that he committed crimes in Bahrain. In fact, the Bahrain case is an absolute joke. It's quite clear that this is politically manufactured case against him, which a rubber court, kangaroo court style judiciary in Bahrain then said he was guilty and sentenced him to 10 years. You know, they say that he was involved in attacking a police station. That's not correct. And in fact, he was with his football teammates at the time that the alleged incident took place. He had just finished a televised football match. You know, so the whole thing is absurd, but I think that Bahrain is trying to exercise influence on Thailand. I think possibly political influence, possibly monetary influence to try to get him back, because it's quite clear that Hakim was one of the accusers against Sheikh Salman. Sheikh Salman is the head of the Asian Football Confederation. He used to be the head of the Bahrain Football Confederation. And this guy, who is a member of the royal family of Bahrain, was involved in identifying which athletes and others were protesting against the Bahrain government during the Arab Spring in 2011. And many of those players were imprisoned and tortured. So Hakim basically said that publicly to places like the New York Times. And many people believe that because of those accusations, Sheikh Salman did not win the presidency of FIFA when that election was done in 2016. And so I think this is a case of Sheikh Salman trying to retaliate against Hakim, trying to pull him back to Bahrain so that he can do whatever he wants to him.
So Rahaf's chances of seeking asylum are exponentially higher because of the attention and support she has received. Would this in any way bolster the chances of other women who are facing the same predicament?
I think that's probably likely. I mean, obviously, her case is being discussed a great deal in Saudi Arabia. I think that there's a lot of conversations going on via Twitter, direct messaging and others that, you know, where young women like her who are oppressed, who are discriminated against in this guardianship system, which is a human rights abomination, you know, want to escape. They want to get out. And I think that, you know, many people will take heart that, you know, she was able to succeed. You know, the reason that she had to wait until the family took a family trip to Kuwait to escape was because under the guardianship system, she would not be able to travel internationally without permission from a male relative. And of course, no male relative was going to give her that permission to do that. So that's why she had to wait till she went to Kuwait to escape. In fact, she said that she had been planning this for more than 2 years.
As you have said, and we certainly hope so as well, a resolution will happen soon for Rahaf, and it will be in her favour. With regards to Hakim Al-Araibi, what do you anticipate will happen next?
You know, Thailand has done the right thing in the case of Rahaf, and they should be commended for that. But they also need to do the right thing by this football player, Hakeem Al-Arabi. The Australian Foreign Minister, Maurice Payne, is actually in Bangkok today. She is meeting with the Deputy Prime Minister. She's meeting with the Foreign Minister. And one of the core demands is that Hakeem Al-Arabi be allowed to return to Australia, that the Australian decision to grant him refugee status be respected by Thailand. And we strongly support those demands, and we're going to continue to fight till Hakeem is allowed to go back to Australia and reunite with his wife there.
Phil, thank you so much for speaking with us. That was Phil Robertson, Deputy Director for the Asia Division of the Human Rights Watch, commenting on the situation of an 18-year-old Saudi Arabian woman who has been kind of holed up in Bangkok, I suppose, who kind of locked herself into a hotel room in Bangkok.
But not just in a remote and safe space.
Yes, yeah. In an effort to attain refugee status, which she now has. And Intan Sabrina raising a good point, saying there are thousands of refugees, women and children in Manus Island and Nauru, who have been waiting for more than 4 years to be given asylum status in Australia. So why should an 18-year-old girl jump the queue? And I think that one of the questions that we asked to Phil, which was that point about how this case has received a significant amount of attention, I think sadly that is the answer, that it is... When you have long-running crises, for instance, what's happening in Yemen, when you have long-running crises, it becomes very easy to live with it, I think, because it just becomes sort of a fact of your existence. And that is a horror. That's not what should happen. But when you have one particular case, you have a face attached to it, one name, one Twitter account, one person telling one story, sadly, that seems to get more of an emotive hook.
And also, I guess it's also related to the recent cases involving Jamal Khashoggi and his assassination, essentially by the Saudi Arabian government. And because of where the news cycle is as well, if it looks bad to Thailand if they don't do anything.
That's the thing, right? And I think Intan, Sabrina, like you raised really an excellent point, and it is a sad fact of where we are that, yeah, and it speaks to something we've been talking about the rest of the show as well, that when you cause a social media kerfuffle, sometimes it, you know, works for good. But yes, there are a lot of people forgotten in all of this. And yes, that's something to acknowledge. We are headed to the news, though. In the meantime, keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.